Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome.
Hello.
Oh, you deliberately screwed that up. That was so deliberate.
Oh, no, but it's only the pressure of knowing we'd got it right.
Yeah.
It was too much.
Just once.
Yeah.
We couldn't keep it going.
No.
No. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi,
and welcome.
How are you?
Again, I'm good. Tim, to Stalking Time for the Moon Boys. We've got to be quite quick in this one because Tim is off to see Mary Poppins.
That's right. No, to see the play.
The play?
Yes.
What do you think I thought I meant?
I don't know, people might not.
The film, know the new movie.
Or the woman. Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I thought people might have thought, that you were going to see a fictional
character. No, I'm going to see a portrayal of the play starring my youngest son. Well, starring. My youngest son is in it.
Yeah.
Well, he's a chimney sweep.
Don't do him down. Mm. But, so anyway, you've got to go and see Otis be a chimney sweep.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he the chimney sweep? I mean, Dick Van Dyke.
Do you know what? I don't actually know. I just know he's a chimney sweep.
Well,
and I think there's a few of them.
Are you? How old is Otis?
It would not be really funny if I just said 28, because it always is funny to say that.
Quite funny.
Quite funny.
Yeah.
If the timing was right, it would be funny.
Well,
if I did it instantly.
I think you've put too many inverted commas around it, to be honest now.
He's 34. Yeah. That was quite funny.
That was quite funny.
Yeah,
I wasn't expecting it.
Exactly.
I was drinking water and I nearly choked.
No, he is 63.
No, it's really not funny.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
All right. No, seriously,
I want to know how old he is because...
I'll tell you.
Okay. You're going to do it again, are you? You're definitely going to do it again.
I'm not going to do it again because it's not funny.
Okay.
36.
It's not funny.
It's
so not funny. So I'm going to assume that he's old enough to talk
to you because he
about
listens to
his
this.
School.
He listens to this. It'd be funny about saying, so he's 66.
Still really not funny. He's old enough to talk to his dad, A, about how a joke after a while starts to not work, and B, about what he's doing in the school play.
Yeah.
And yet you don't know.
No, he's one of the...
You don't know if he's Dick Van Dyke.
He's not. There's a few chimney sweeps and he's playing one of those.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
So, but often in these school plays, they've sort of slightly, you know, there's roles that they don't always have in the original, aren't there, to help kids get kids involved and stuff.
If this was an American film,
right,
you wouldn't quite make it to your son's play.
Okay, right. I think you might not die.
No. It'd be like some big family issue going on.
Yeah.
You'd be played by Steve Carell.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
And there'd be a big family issue going on.
Yeah.
And your wife would have said to you, you've got to make the play.
Yeah.
Whatever else is happening in your life
with
that podcast that you do about David Bowie.
Yeah.
You know, just make sure you're there for the school play. And then stuff would happen.
You're hovering on an American accent.
Yeah,
you're going to commit to it.
It wasn't very good. I can't do, you know, I can't do accents.
Yeah.
I can't do any accents.
Yeah.
I can't even do an American accent.
Yeah.
I was born in America.
Right.
I hold an American passport.
Right.
I can't do an American accent. But anyway, in this film, your wife, let's say she's played by an English woman.
Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt.
Right.
Seems a bit young for you.
Right.
Nonetheless.
Well, I'd be played by someone younger, probably.
No, you wouldn't, because you're the dad.
Oh, I see.
You're a dad in this movie.
Right.
And my point is simply that it's often the case in American films.
Yeah.
That the key moment of, them either making it right with their family, the problem that they've had, or not making it
right,
is that they turn up or they don't to a school play.
Yeah, and right. So, but I will get there, which is why we're rushing this. We're not rushing it, but we're going to do it.
Slight rushing,
but
you talk about rushing it. I'd like to see your face when Otis is crying, and you have to say to him, "I just wanted to do the 66 joke, just one more time." I'm sorry, Otis.
Can I genuinely?
He says, "Can I get my pension?"
Genuinely, do you want to know?
I
how
think
old
that
he is?
Should have got a bigger laugh.
What? Sorry, I was too busy thinking.
He got a laugh from Ben, and he's trying to keep quiet.
Ben is our new producer for this week. Ben edits the show,
yeah,
doesn't he? So
I know, it's incredible. Someone edits this show.
But do you genuinely, do you want to know how old Otis is?
Oh, fuck off. Yes.
Shall I tell you?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm genuinely in two minds about this. And it shouldn't matter, should it? But it's becoming one of the most important decisions I've ever made.
So, how old is Otis?
His age, genuinely, all joking aside, because this is about Otis, my son.
Yeah.
93.
It's just going up. Anyway. So, we have to be quick.
Right.
Apparently not, but we're supposed to be being quick. And one of the things that I think is important that we should talk about is we've had a small wager, me and Tim Hinks, which is that I bet him on my email that there's a Bowie song that I could play him that he'd never have heard of.
What was the bet, by the way?
Well, how much bet, did I know you're a rich man, but you know, 10 quid is 10 quid, Tim. But we bet. I said you won't have heard this Bowie song.
Right.
I found a Bowie song that I know you won't have heard. I bet you won't have heard it. Mm. And you accepted the bet, 10 quid. And then it occurred to me afterwards, how do we prove?
Oh, how do you prove?
Because you could say, no, I know that. Of course I know that. Everyone knows that. If you don't want to pay the money.
Funnily enough, I'm thinking the opposite. I'm thinking when you say to me, here's a song you've never heard of, I'm thinking probably... So I mean, as in, I fronted it up and said, I'll bet, and I will honour that bet.
Well, you didn't say that. But you didn't say that. No, I refer you back to what you actually said was that you found that hard to believe, and let's hope it's not just a track on Lodger, the third track on Lodger. But anyway...
OK, so you've got this track.
So are you still... Okay. We've still got the bet.
Yeah, so I suppose I'm just going to have to say, I'll be really honest.
OK.
If you play it...
I believe you.
Right. Do you?
I believe you will be honest.
Yeah, OK. OK, yeah. Good.
I mean, to be honest with you, I just think you definitely won't.
That makes me more likely to be honest. If I was any,
it's
you
more
saying
likely.
That.
It's more likely that you might contest whether it is a track.
Oh, that's a bit okay.
Okay, so I'll play you a bit of it. I mean, there's two tracks actually, but I'll play you a bit of it. Hang on, see if we can get the bit that actually sounds.
I would love
like
this.
Track.
Here we go. I would just love this to be Lady Stardust.
Here we go. Okay, so have you heard that before?
I have never heard that before.
Okay, you owe me 10 quid.
Mm. Is it a song, as you said? Is it actually, because I thought it might be like at the end of, let's say, Earthling or something.
Right.
And you'd found something interesting about it and you bet I haven't heard it.
Yeah.
Which could be true, because I don't know if you know what the last track on Earthling is.
No, I don't.
No. So can we say we're evens now?
No.
Oh, right.
Because I didn't accept that as a bet.
Okay. Yeah. So I owe you £10.
Yeah, you owe me £10. You're going to actually pay the £10.
The thing about...
Or you're going to say it's not a song. I mean, that is a fair point.
I worry
it's
that it's
a
not
song.
A song. It sounds like it's a demo.
Yeah.
But you're saying it was released as a single.
Well, no.
Well, on vinyl.
I'm not
vinyl.
Saying that. I'm saying it exists on vinyl, which is very weird. I've seen pictures of it. And I'm saying that it's track listed, as it were, on Pushing Ahead of the Day. Is that a Bowie song?
Yeah.
I mean, I have to also say I thought you'd be more excited.
Well, I suppose I think that's the issue, which is I'd be more excited if it was a single, like a B-side. Let's say we're in that territory.
Yeah.
And it was the B-side
of... Like conversation piece.
Right, and I thought, bloody hell, I've never heard that. And that's a proper song, and it was really... Whereas this seems like just something that would only exist because the internet exists. You know
that's
what I mean?
True. And you're not going to be playing it at home thinking, I really like this song I've never heard before.
Right. So I think you owe me £10.
Also, something about it which I think is problematic.
I'm not going to pick that up.
No, I'm not going to pick up on that. Okay. It's problematic, which is the song is called Velvet Couch. Now, as far as I know, there's no lyric in it that refers to Velvet Couch. And also, as we know, there's quite a famous song. Again, not actually on any album, but quite a famous song by Bowie called Velvet Goldmine.
Yep.
And a film called Velvet Goldmine that perhaps we could discuss another time, the Velvet Goldmine film, which I quite like. Do you like Velvet Goldmine?
Yeah, it's been a while since I watched it, but I think it's fun. And
I quite like it.
It's one of those films you think that at least it's covering a really interesting area and not many people do it. I don't think it's flawless, right? But
it's definitely
quite...
not flawless. One thing I would say about Velvet Goldmine is Todd Haynes, who's a very good director, I think. It does an amazing thing, which is films about rock stars that don't get the rights to use their music are the shittest thing ever. And it happens quite a lot. Like, there was a Hendrix film recently.
That's right, yeah. No, that was
I can't remember what it was called.
Wasn't it called Jimmy or something?
But no, no, it's not called Jimmy. It's got sort of poetic title. I can't remember what it's called. But I started watching it, and what it does, because I didn't realise until about 40 minutes in that they haven't actually got the rights to use any of his music, is it has him playing the Jimmy guy quite a lot in various bands.
Right.
Has Eric Clapton watching him and stuff like that. And you're thinking, I don't think I know this Hendrix track, this Hendrix workout. And then you realise, that's because it's not a track. It's something they've made up. It's like a jam. Hendrix.
Yeah,
and I think there's a few things like that. And it's shit. You just know that's completely pointless. You haven't got the rights, don't make the film. I mean, it's a slightly different example, but in Sylvia, which is the film about Sylvia Plath, they didn't get the rights to use either Sylvia Plath's or Ted Hughes's poetry.
Wow, that's...
So the whole film, you're thinking, like, why are we bothering?
Yes.
Because these people, that's why they're interesting. Mm. So, the extraordinary thing about Velvet Goldmine is it's really about David Bowie. It's a kind of the nearest thing we may ever get, because he obviously doesn't want a biopic. Although, I don't know if he can actually do that now that he's dead.
There's nothing to stop us. Well, we could do it.
We could do it. Actually, I heard recently that Duncan was working on trying to stop it, because there is talk of it happening.
Right.
But
I see, in a sort of Bohemian Rhapsody type way, a big film.
Yeah, but they still, again, not Bohemian Rhapsody, they had the music because Queen are involved. So anyway, my point is that Velvet Goldmine is kind of a biopic of Bowie in a very kind of sort of lateral way. Doesn't have any David Bowie songs in it.
Yeah.
And you don't mind that
you
much.
You don't mind it, no
right, because it does a very clever thing, which is it uses songs by Cockney Rebel and other people, sort of quite obscure songs.
Is there some
songs.
Roxy Music in there, is it?
Yeah, I think there's Roxy Music. There's also songs that they wrote. And actually, I'm going to play it. I'm going to play this song, which I actually really like, from Velvet Goldmine. So the character is called Maxwell Demon, I believe.
Right, that's a poor name.
And there's one particular song, The Ballad of Maxwell Demon. Do you know that song?
Okay, I would have heard it.
Let's have a very quick listen to it, because I was obsessed with this song briefly. It's a very Bowie song. It's one of those songs, we've played them
once
before.
Who's singing it then?
It's sung by Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Okay, right.
Who plays the character. Okay, so this is it. I like that song quite a lot.
No, I think two things about it.
Yeah.
One is it absolutely gets that Ronson guitar.
Yeah, the Ronson guitar thing.
Orchestrated octaves, and I think really, really well. But it's a great vocal performance, but it also shows you, fucking hell, nobody could sing like Bowie.
Yes.
And you just cannot get close, can you? Because I think what would make that a Bowie song, without a statement of the obvious, is the way Bowie would sing that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard it for a while.
Yeah.
And what I noticed about it, having introduced it as, like, this is a really good Bowie sound, like, it is a good Bowie sound, like, particularly the Ronson thing.
Yeah.
But actually, there's something quite 90s about it. When
that's
you actually
what I mean.
Watch
yeah,
it
yeah.
again, you think, oh, no, it's a bit more 90s than I remember.
No, it's a bit studied, which is what it is, and so it's a sort of pastiche. But it's that, you know, that... Mick Ronson used a tone bender to get that sound. So it's like the sound of a wah-wah, but it's like a treble that's been played around with on that guitar. So it's like the prettiest star.
Yes,
that,
exactly.
Isn't it?
It
that
is what it's
perfect
going for.
Period. Yeah. So you get that really signature sort of guitar sound.
Yeah.
But without that voice.
No, but
you're craving, aren't you? But
I like Jonathan Rhys-Meyers' voice on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, how did we get onto that?
It's what I wanted.
How did we get onto it?
Because you were something to do with me owing you money.
Well, you owe me the money.
A film with the rock star without
whether,
the music.
Well, we were talking about whether it was a real song, and I don't know how we got there. So one thing I did lead me on though is in the Pushing Ahead of the Dane section on those John Cale songs. Someone underneath it has referred to this bit of Bowie stage banter, which was in Dublin in 1997. Now, I've got to find the correct bit.
Right.
This is quite a good... I think Bowie did think that he was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And we've talked on the show about how he wasn't.
He's...
But to be fair to David...
This is funny, right?
I've seen a couple of things where he's on stage and he gets big laughs.
Yeah.
So, you know...
And when are we talking here? We're in 1997.
This is 1997.
Okay.
But he's talking about a story. He tells a story from the 70s.
Okay.
I think you might have to listen to the whole story.
Okay, that's all right.
I went over to New York around 1970 to see the Velvet Underground. manager of a club called the Electric Factory. It's nothing like this. How grand is this with boxes? They came on stage and they were riveting. They were so cool. They were so great. Afterwards, I went backstage and I knocked on the dressing room door. I said, can I speak to Lou Reed? And he came to the door and sat down and talked about half an hour. And I told him how much I loved his writing, you know, how just ultimately incredibly cool he was and all that. And he was so nice and really acknowledged the fact and all that. And then afterwards I told a friend of mine in New York, I said, you know, Lou is great. He said, so he said, where did you see Lou? I said, well, the Underground gig. He said, Lou left last year. I said, what are you talking about? I said, no, their lead singer is called Doug Yule. It looks just like him.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
That is brilliantly told as well.
It's brilliantly told. It's a proper a funny story. It's a good story.
It surprised me. I didn't know that was coming.
No.
He really does a good job.
He really does a good job. It gets a proper big laugh.
Yeah. Like, yes, it gets a comedy club laugh.
It gets a comedy club laugh, yeah, because... And he definitely tells it properly. Because I like the detail of it. Yeah. You know, I was really keen on Lou Reed. Yeah. Like, he sets up... I mean, we know this anyway, but he sets up correctly, comically... how much of a fan he was, how what a big deal it was to go backstage and meet Lou Reed, how excited he was to meet him.
But he also gives a hint.
It's not Lou
Reed.
He
also gives a hint of how well Lou Reed in this story took it. He reciprocated it.
Yeah.
So you're setting up the whole thing. It all makes perfect sense until he tells you that, and then it makes even more sense. You think, of course.
Of course, it's Doug Yule. Can I just get a picture of Doug Yule up?
Yeah.
Because I don't know that much about Doug Yule.
No,
he's
I
a
don't
slightly
know.
Forgotten figure.
What is he? What is he? Rock. Just a lookalike? Is he? What?
You know who he was?
No, I don't know.
You
about
don't?
Him. No, no.
Okay, so Lou Reed left the Velvet Underground before Loaded.
Okay.
You know Loaded?
Yeah.
Loaded is a really good album.
Okay.
I mean, it's got New Age on it. You know that track?
I do.
It's a brilliant
track.
Lou
Reed's not in that.
No, he's not in Loaded.
Okay.
And Doug Yule, who was just a bloke, I think, took over, and I have never seen what he looks like. Okay, here he is. He looks a bit like Chris Addison. I would say.
Yes, that's what you mean, yeah.
He looks like a sort of, you know, fresh-faced... I mean, here he is now, but now that doesn't help.
No, he doesn't look anything like Lou Reed there.
No, he doesn't.
That might not even be him, to be honest.
That is him.
Violinist.
Yeah, violinisto bio for Doug Yule. What does Doug Yule do now? I mean, Doug Yule, you know, this is the bloke who took over from Lou Reed in the Velvet Underground, and no one has any sense of him at all, which is weird. I mean, I say no one. Yeah, he currently lives in Wallingford, Seattle.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With his partner Beth, his son Dan, and two dogs.
Okay. Oh, I think I do know him.
You do know him?
Just from that description. Okay. Because that does you.
Yeah. So there we go. So there's David saying a funny story. I mean, I think what it might mean, I'm not going to do it now, but it might mean that I might have to go look at some more, because there's a few David Bowie stage banter
things.
Do you know there was a thing that came out a few years ago?
Right.
Do you ever sort of see this? It came out a few years ago, which someone sent it to me. It claimed to be Bowie actually doing stand-up.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Okay.
And
I listened to the whole thing.
Literally doing a stand-up
gig? Literally doing stand-up. I listened to the whole thing, and then it wasn't confirmed that it was him.
Okay. It's audio, is it?
It's an audio tape. It appears to be Bowie doing, like, a proper hour.
Okay. That seems very unlikely, doesn't it?
Well, I don't think it's completely unlikely, but I'll see if I can find it at some point.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, because Bowie, he's got that audience in the palm of his hand, and it's a funny story. When you played, like, Wembley, like, what's the biggest state? What was the biggest venue you've been in, or the biggest number of, for comedy?
Well, for straightforward comedy, it would be Wembley, although, as we know, I did do Sports Personality of the Year, doing Three Lions at the in Birmingham in an arena, what I think probably what used to be the NEC, and there was probably more people there, and theoretically not comedy, but I sensed some people were laughing.
The straight comedy thing,
yeah.
Obviously, when thousands of people laugh, that's a wonderful, you know, you've talked about that many. Presumably, when it doesn't land well, is that doubly, is that worse? Because Bowie had quite a lot of that. Did you ever have, you must have had moments when something didn't land?
Yeah.
In front of what?
Yeah.
60,000? I don't know what. Like,
well, no, not.
How many people? Well, tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
When it doesn't land.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Like worse than.
Yeah.
Is that as bad as it can
be?
The
worst time for me was I came on to present at the Comedy Awards once.
Oh, God.
And did a joke about looking like Osama bin Laden.
Right.
That was either misjudged or just not funny. I can't remember the exact joke
right.
now.
Right.
I can't remember how it was phrased.
Right.
But it really didn't work.
Okay.
I still have nightmares about
it. Do you?
Occasionally, yeah.
Because it felt just awful.
Well, it was a combination of the fact that it was in front of an audience entirely of my peers.
Right, yes, that's...
And it was on telly and live.
Right.
It was terrible, yeah.
When I occasionally write things down
for this, yeah.
I found something... So I must have said, when Paul McCartney tried marijuana grass in the 60s, he was in a hotel room with Bob Dylan and all sorts of people, and he basically smoked this. As you know what happens, you smoke.
I know what happens, right? Yeah.
And he called over Mal Evans, who's the sort of roadie, you know, for the Beatles, and said he'd got the answer. Like, I've got the answer, and can you write it down?
Yes.
So he dictated this thing.
I know
the
story.
Right, and then in the morning or whenever he shows, Mal says, "Oh, by the way, this is the meaning of this is what you said," and it just says there are seven levels.
Yes.
That's all he said.
Yes.
Which might be true, might not, but it's not much use to us, is it? I don't think.
No, it's quite Scientology.
Right? So, for example, it's not true at the Westfield.
No.
Well, now I think about it, because that's three.
Is it three?
The Westfield, West London, is three levels, I think.
Okay. Well, it's definitely, and also, it would have been incredible if he knew about the Westfield in 1967.
But then maybe people might know of a car park or a building that is seven.
Well, I'm thinking in Captain Scarlet. There's an episode of Captain Scarlet where there's something called London Car View. Which is sort of a car park and sort of a viewing platform, and and that I think has seven levels.
So that's what he was.
That's what
he was talking about.
That might be what he was talking about. Okay. Yeah, check it out, London Car View.
If anyone
Scarlet.
Listening knows of other places that have seven levels,
yeah,
I'm sort of hoping not, because that means it's definitely that.
Yeah, okay, that's what he meant. But why are you telling me this?
Well, because similarly, I've written down something which I'm interested. I'm interested in myself, right. Weirdly, in what I've written down.
Did you write it when you were high on marijuana?
No, I didn't. Beauty and the Beast, 2:21. And I think what I've written is the whole of the 80s in one line.
About Beauty and the Beast?
This bit is the whole of the 80s.
Okay.
So Beauty and the Beast is recorded in what, sort of 78 or 77, 78. And I've written down that this line is like, and I think I remember it roughly.
Do you mean what he's, the
lyric? Way he sings it is almost like, this is what the 80s are going to sound like, but we're still at the end of the 70s.
Okay.
In that, you know that way that Bowie, as you know, was ahead of the wave back then?
Yeah.
I think it's like the whole of the 80s sounded like this. I'm going to just keep repeating myself until we play it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's at 2:21, and let's see if I agree with myself, let alone.
Okay, so you wrote that down, and now you're not sure.
I just can't remember what the particular bit is.
Okay.
But, you ready?
Yes.
Is this the whole of the 80s?
The whole of the 80s.
I know what I mean.
What do you mean?
What I mean is...
Well, I mean, it sounds very 80s.
It's very 80s. It's got that
say?
Slightly speak, I wanted to believe, I wanted some distract, but it's that voice.
Yeah.
And I suppose the reason I wrote it down is because we remind ourselves sometimes that we are very serious about Bowie, despite... Mm. Sorry. And that is extraordinarily cool, prophesizes the way people would sing. That voice got everyone, Heaven 17.
Yeah, I mean...
Echo and the Bunnymen.
Yeah.
Name it, Ultravox, they all copied that.
That's true. I mean, I think what it brings home is something don't take this the wrong way,
yeah,
slightly banal. I mean, but in a good way. Right. Because
that's the best sort of banal, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, because it's obvious, but it perhaps has never struck either of us before, what an incredible influence Bowie had on the vocal stylings of the 1980s. Like everything from Blancmange, you know, to Gary Numan, to Spandau Ballet, the way Spandau Ballet, even Tony Hadley, who is in some ways the opposite extreme as a person to David Bowie, is still singing.
It became how you sang.
In that semi-operatic sort of way.
Slightly speaky.
Yeah.
Slightly sort of,
And but also, of course, it's not the way that Bowie originally sung.
Mm.
It's what I think my daughter said was a crooning style that he evolved in the late 70s, because the original sort of Tony Newley thing, he dropped for this slightly...
No, it's... We were talking... Pippa, my wife, who you know, and I were talking the other day about Gary Numan.
Mm.
And he is married to a super fan, isn't he?
Yes, I've met her.
Right, okay.
I've met Gary and her. So I met them at the Eclipse. You remember the Eclipse?
The Eclipse?
Yes. About, 20 years ago now, probably.
It's a club, is it?
No.
What is it then?
No, it's an actual eclipse of the sun.
It sounds like a club.
No, it's an actual eclipse of the sun in Cornwall. If you, I don't know if you remember, but when the eclipse happened, which I think was in like the late 90s, there was...
Well, there have been several since then.
No, there hasn't been, to my knowledge.
Oh, the one where...
In Britain, a full eclipse of the sun since the late 90s.
Got it,
Or possibly early 2000s.
Yeah, I know the one you mean,
And I went to Cornwall with my now wife, then girlfriend, who is Cornish, to watch the eclipse. It was quite depressing because the weather was completely wrong for it.
Okay.
Like obviously, what do you want for an eclipse?
Yes.
You want completely blue sky.
Of course,
So you can see the sun and then you can see it change. Obviously, you don't look completely at the sun, boys and girls, but even so.
Worth saying that,
But you want the weather to change. Yeah. But it was very, very cloudy.
Yeah.
And part of what made that extraordinary was Michael Fish was there.
With you?
In Cornwall. Well, not with me. I hadn't gone down with Michael Fish, but I was...
With Gary Numan and...
Well, hang on. Don't get ahead of yourself. a lot of people were there, important people, myself.
Okay.
Michael Fish had come down, because he's like a meteorologist, and it's a big deal, the eclipse.
Yeah, of course,
so I saw him at a hotel in Cornwall, looking really pissed off. And then I thought, why is he so pissed off?
Mm.
Possibly still about the hurricane.
Mm. Yeah,
still fucked
still
if
lingered.
He got that wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think more likely, he's come all this way, and the weather isn't what he wants.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so then me and Morwenna, I think we were coming back from the...
By the way, everyone's looked at the sun, haven't they? We've all looked directly at the sun.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's you're okay if it's quick.
It's got to be quite quick,
That's
though.
Not official advice, but you are okay, aren't
well,
you?
Well, part of the problem with looking at the sun during an eclipse, of course, you are very tempted to do it because it's behind the moon.
Yeah,
right. It's got to be all right now. I mean, I've looked at it, as you say, briefly, when it's like I'm unencumbered by moon.
Do you think, is there anyone...
Do you think it's possible... What are you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, is there anyone out there who is blind because they looked at the sun?
Oh, I thought you were going to say... I had a whole joke ready because I decided that you were going to say, is there anyone out there who's the right size to stand in front of the sun and then you can look at the sun? And I was going to say...
That's a very specific thing you thought I was going to say. I was anywhere near saying that.
I was reverse engineering what you were going to say because the gag was going to be Keith Moon...
My God, that is retrofitting to extreme. The chances of me saying that to set that up are so infinitesimally small.
Well, yes, we're talking about quantum physics here. Yes, no, I decided I've got this joke. It's going to be great. And Tim's going to say something that's going to leave.
Which allows the punchline, Keith Moon.
Keith Moon. Well, you know.
Oh, yet again, he hasn't set it up for me.
Be fair to me, it's a podcast about music. We're talking about Eclipse.
No, but
you start to say, I wonder if...
Yeah, but the thing I'm going to say is not about music. It's about someone being tall enough to block out the sun. It's got nothing
also,
to do with...
Also, he wasn't particularly tall.
Also, he wasn't tall.
But apparently you can look at the sun if Keith Moon is standing in front of it.
Well, that's true. That's true of anyone.
Yeah.
So
what was the question?
Can you imagine a rock drummer who might block out the sun? That was going to be my question.
Yeah. Oh, he had a dark side, though. Hey.
Forget the moon stuff. It's not working. Do you think anyone's actually looked at the sun and says, yeah, it's true, I just looked at it too long. I wish I hadn't. They've suffered.
I don't know.
No, I mean, I don't think you know, but
I have no
idea. Interesting to know.
Trump did it, didn't he? Yeah, because there was an eclipse in America after, you know, quite recently, because after Trump
directly
came to power.
At it.
And he's got his glasses on, but there's a shot of him looking directly at the sun, and it's all one of many shots of Trump doing something stupid.
Right.
Possibly not as stupid as trying to reverse engineer that Keith Moon joke.
No, that was extraordinary.
Yeah.
That was playing the numbers game.
Anyway, so to finally get to the point, I think we were coming back from... It is still quite impressive because even though it was completely grey,
the eclipse does go really dark
for about a minute, and all the animals get confused. Mm. You can hear birds starting to sing, like the way they do at the end of the day or whatever. I didn't quite work that bit trying to set the scene. Anyway, we're going back towards a hotel in Falmouth.
It's likely the worst opening paragraph to a novel ever.
And a van is there just on the road, and the back of the van opens, and it's Gary Numan and his wife who've come down for the eclipse, and they're just being really friendly and nice. And I've never met Gary Numan, but he said hello to me.
Right.
I think he might have known Morwenna, because Morwenna used to produce the Jack Doherty Show.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the reason I'm bringing it up is that David Bowie was on the Jack Doherty Show. It's a really brilliant interview. And that's why I did it. And that's why I've got children. I've just realised this is an amazing moment. I've just realised it all come together. My whole life has come together despite the Keith Moon joke, which is, when I actually think about it, the reason I did the Jack Doherty Show in 1997...
Yeah.
It was on Channel 5, when Channel 5 was a tiny bit cooler than it is now, and they used to have the Jack Doc Show as a regular show. And I did that show because David Bowie was on it, and I thought, oh, well, if David Bowie's done it, I should do it. That's where I met properly Morwenna.
How lovely.
She was producing it. Mm. And soon after that, we got together.
Yeah.
So Bowie is responsible.
I should tell you how I met... It's not Bowie-related, but how I met my wife.
Well, tell me now.
I mean, it's got no Bowie connection, but it's... So it's 1996, and I'm obviously single, and I'm going to an Arsenal game, and I got a phone call. Would it be in a text message in 96? I feel like it was text message. So let's say it was. From my friend Dave Dowding.
Dave Dowding,
yeah. I haven't seen him for a while, but he's a lovely fella.
Yeah.
Or Dave Ding Dong, as we called him.
Right, he's always got a nickname.
And he said, come to a party, we're going to a party. And I remember thinking... I'm not interested. I don't want to go. I'm going to go home. Just sort of, you know, not up for it tonight. And then he texted me saying it's in this particular road. And I said, I'm not up for it. But then I was walking back to the tube and crossed this road and said, that's the road.
All right.
So I texted him saying, I think I'm actually on the road. And he said, well, you might as well come by. So I then went to this party, and that is where I met my wife.
Wow.
And
that is amazing.
And I met her, and a friend of mine was basically harassing her, not in a Me Too sense, coming on to her a bit. And so she came over to me and said, can we chat? Can we talk? And that's when I met her. Yeah, and I knew immediately.
So she made the first approach?
She did, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think what would be marvellous, in a way, is if you telling me that story, which you didn't think you were going to tell me, and then I forced it out of you, actually made you late for your son's play.
Yes,
that would be brilliant.
Yeah.
If, like, the story that led to his existence is what led to letting him down and possibly ruining his life.
I think when I... or what's left of it, because he's 78, as you know, is that at the end of the film, I'm on the shoulders of people, I'm going across to Pippa, sort of with the music playing, making my way to her to sort of explain, I'm late because I told the story of when we met.
Yes.
And she just thinks
that's not good enough.
Brilliant. It's not good enough.
No. Well, I think more often in the American film, it can be two things the child play. It can either be the moment of redemption, and so then the parents are there and everything's sorted.
Right.
But more often, it's the moment that the parent, and normally the dad, not always, hasn't quite got there in time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's reasons for it, but at the end of the day, it's his fault.
Mm.
And that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, but I'm going to
right
go in
now.
Because I'm going to go in. I'm
you better go.
Got to go.
Tell you what, Ben has wanted to play the Langley School, and it fits because it's a school play, the Langley School's music project version of Space Oddity.
Okay.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Know what this is, do you?
Well, I don't remember it.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember it was a big deal. It was refound a few years ago.
Okay.
It is amazing. It's a school singing lots and lots of different pop songs. And last week, you'll remember, we found a live version of Space Oddity in which David Bowie does the liftoff very, very badly. So I think the question is, how do Langley School's music project manage it? Okay, it's a victory for the Langley School's music project.